Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And good afternoon, Rochester, on this very cold Saturday, February 13th, Dominus 2016. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
Yes, Nick is, as he always tells us, six steps ahead of the law, and with him,
he's wearing a snowsuit.
He's really
today.
Hollered
yeah.
to stay warm because, folks, what else you got to do? You know, definitely. You know, grab that extra cup of coffee. Hopefully, you know, you're just snuggled on in and not much to do, but...
Go get your software updates.
Yeah, exactly. Or
check your backups.
You might also want to consider doing that, at least get the download for the Windows 10. Or, more important for the fellows, if you haven't thought about doing something for Valentine's, you might definitely want to do it right now because hopefully shoppers are
right.
At a minimum out there. You might be able to sneak out there and get something ahead of time because tomorrow is Valentine's Day. And
what better way to say I love you than when the gift of snow tires?
Or that extra large scraper.
That's right.
Or better yet.
Personalized, right?
No, you know what would be even better?
What's that?
You take her car.
Yeah.
You have a... Take it over and have a remote start put in.
Oh, you know, remote start.
I never
had one until I just got this car, and it came with the car when I bought it used.
Oh.
And I thought to myself, well, this is great, but am I really going to use this? And boy, I use it all the time.
It is fantastic.
And they're not that expensive to put in.
No, no.
I can look out my window and see my van, and I can yell at it to start, and it ignores me.
Yeah. It just shrugs.
I sit there, well, at work even. I go out to the front door. In the past few days, I just sit there, hit the button.
Right.
I come out to a nice warm car.
That's
it's already
right.
heated up. Same with in the morning. I can just sit there, point it at the garage. And it's weird because you open up the garage door and there's the lights on. Everything else, the car's already heated. I don't even have to knock the snow off or anything else.
Yeah,
out I
great.
Go and away I go.
I highly recommend it. If it's something you're even remotely considering, so to speak. Then definitely pull the trigger on that one.
Yeah. But no, Nick is definitely taking a day's rest and hopefully takes full advantage of that. And we're just, the three of us, just going to go ahead and go on. But like I was saying, one consideration I was telling folks, because I've had a number of folks asking me, is right now with Windows 10.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't hurt, because this is February, to go ahead and start downloading it. And... You know, at least have it sitting there to give it a try. I mean, I've had a couple folks that were fortunate enough to have an extra machine, and they went ahead and threw it on there just to try it.
Now, what does Microsoft say the minimum specifications are for that? How much memory do they claim that you really need to have versus what do you recommend?
Well, I would, you know, an i5 processor, definitely. I prefer 8 gig of memory.
Okay.
Memory is so cheap nowadays. You're foolish not to start out with 8.
Okay.
And like we've said before, Windows will take advantage of all the memory you give it to it. It's like a dance floor. The more dance floor you supply it with more memory, the better the performance.
Right. You're not as constrained.
Yeah. And definitely a better, you know, 16, 32, or 64 gig graphics card.
Okay.
You know, I mean, it's all GUI interface, so it's graphic intensive.
Right.
And if you're going to get one of these machines that has onboard graphics, in other words, if you were to look at the back of the machine and the video card is along the side there, not a separate slot, that's onboard graphics. Even more memory is better. I'd go 32 because it's sharing things in and out. A terabyte hard drive is common nowadays, but they are saying... from what I've been reading on a lot of the different folks' comments, definitely Windows 10 is an improvement over 8.
Okay.
You know, an 8.1. But here's the thing. You know, folks, we all got to take our heads out of the sand because, yes, it's a free upgrade. But a company doesn't stay in business giving everything away for free.
So what does Microsoft get by having a large number of people all on Windows 10?
Right now, Windows 10 is a platform to finally get folks on 7 and 8, especially 8, which a lot of folks were very unhappy. Most of corporate America never went to Windows 8.
That's true.
And a lot of homes didn't because it was too much of a change. It was totally blew their minds, you know, and they couldn't find things. They didn't know how to do this, do they? They were used to, you know, especially a lot of us that have been around since Windows 3.1 or Windows 286, if any of the folks remember that. But Windows 3.1 was the biggest one, and moving on up, it had a general feel to it. The button was always down in the lower left-hand corner. You could look at the menus and change things around. And
there was a desktop with icons.
Yes, exactly. Instance. And, you know, it changed a little, but not a lot. Windows 8 was a major change in trying to get everything to go to, like, a tablet format.
Right. With a touchscreen.
Yeah, and people weren't ready for that. Corporate America wasn't ready for it. They weren't going to spend thousands of dollars with, you know, jobs being thrown out the door right now, moving to China and every place else, to turn around and spend money on upgrading all their machines and then turn around and then have to take the time and effort to train everybody.
Right.
You know, and it wasn't compatible with a lot of printers and other devices. But again, if you're going to go to Windows 10, it still holds true.
So generally, if you have a machine that's only 2 or 3 years old, you're probably safe going to Windows 10.
Right.
Hardware compatibility-wise.
Hardware. But right. The one thing I was going to stress to folks is, yes, your hardware might sit there and, you know, it does the analysis and says, yeah, it'll work with Windows 10. What you have to take the time and do is do the research on the various programs that you use within Windows. Say like your Quickens or this other graphics program or a sound program, whatever you're doing, make sure that other third-party program that you're going to put on Windows is going to work with Windows 10.
Yeah, you got to do that homework first.
Yeah, because you could get Windows 10 on there and it works. And they didn't lie to you. It works. But the other software doesn't. And I've had a number of turnkey systems that won't work with Windows 10 yet. They will in time, but like anything else, it's going to take a little time because Windows 10 is just finally starting to get settled down in, you know, what the final code is going to be and how things are reacting and doing and this and that. So now once that settles down and is even and stable, then, you know, they software developers then can write to that. It wasn't like Windows 7. Windows 7, I got to admit, right out of the box, it was perfect. There was no major updates to Windows 7. Like, you didn't have Service Pack 1 or Service Pack 2 like you did with Windows XP.
Right.
And all that. Windows 7 came out, and it was there. They did a few updates and all that, yeah. But no big Service Pack. It just wasn't there. You know, so, all right. Yep. You guys go on for a moment. I'm going to grab a call here.
Yeah, Microsoft does have a compatibility checker that tries to check your hardware and software to see if it is compatible enough for Windows 7. I can't get to it because I'm on a Mac. It won't even show me the link where I can download or tell somebody else where to get the compatibility checker. I changed my user agent to Windows, and it didn't like that either.
Oh, you couldn't trick Microsoft's site?
Yeah.
That's interesting. We'll have to investigate that a little further. Yeah.
Well, tell you what, we got our first caller who's in staying warm. Larry, how you doing, sir?
Fine, and you guys today?
Hey, we're in here staying warm.
Same place I'm at. It is cold.
That's for sure.
That's just...
I have a question. How on a Mac do you stop photos from trying to upload images? I had my iPad connected the other night, and all I was trying to do was load a different, I don't know, what do you call it, screen image. I have the Lotus on it that came with it, wanted to put another screen image on, and I turned it on, and I thought I was following the instructions. Next thing you know, I'm uploading everything from photos on the iMac to my iPad.
Oh, okay, and downloading. Sorry.
Yeah,
downloading from the computer to the photos.
Exactly.
Right.
And I don't want it there. I don't have a lot of photos on my iPad. Mm-hmm. Don't want them there.
And they take up space. Yeah.
The problem is when I try to find or use the directions to delete, because unfortunately your iPad won't let you delete them by itself.
Because you've synced them, yeah, from your computer.
I don't know how to do that.
Right.
I'd like to do that.
There are two ways. When you in iTunes, you tell the computer to download photos from your computer to the iPad.
Uh-huh.
And in the Photos app, you tell the computer to upload photos from your computer to the photo stream.
Wait, say again, in the Photos app.
Right, in the Photos app, it's, uh-huh. There's a feature called Photo Stream,
uh-huh.
where you tell the computer to upload all your photos to the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the iPad, in the iCloud settings, you tell it you want to download all the photo streams.
Okay.
It sounds like what you did is used iTunes to sync photos from the computer to the iPad.
Right.
So you have to go back into iTunes. You select the iPad and then go through the tabs until you find the Photos tab.
Mm-hmm.
Uncheck the stuff you don't want to sync.
Okay, so Photo tab.
So in iTunes, which controls the syncing.
Check.
And I'm going to see if I can find a tech article for that to post as well.
Okay.
So iTunes is used to sync your photo. Well, nominally, it's used to sync your music, mm-hmm. and then it was expanded to sync your media, so movies and TV shows as well.
Okay.
But then it also syncs your photo. So basically, iTunes syncs anything from your computer to your iDevice.
Okay. Before I could realized to basically snatch the plug out of the wall, it was gone nuts.
Yeah, it's
uploading images or downloading images.
Right. And so that setting is turned on in iTunes. With most of the modern computers, you mm-hmm. know, the modern OSs, you don't need to sync through iTunes anymore. You can sync through iCloud and then not need to worry about using iTunes. So iTunes is still used for music that you rip outside of the Apple Store. So if you have your own CDs, you rip in.
Mm-hmm.
You would still need to use that use iTunes to sync music.
Okay.
But music you purchase from the iTunes Store on one device, you can download again on your other devices, and you don't need to sync it to the computer anymore.
Okay.
But it sounds like at some point your iPad was synced to the computer, and it has been told to sync photos.
I see.
So you got to go into iPhoto and turn that off. Sorry, iTunes and turn that off. That's
okay.
That's the problem. There's too many i programs. So now Apple has stopped the iPhoto was replaced with a new app called Photos a year or so ago.
Right.
And so they're getting rid of the i name, which is interesting.
Ah, okay. I think I got what you said. I'm trying to write awful fast.
And yeah, and I found the link to post.
I'll link to the post.
Yep.
One last question. Does once you turn your iPad
Tell you what,
on
Larry, if you could just hold off, and we'll put you on hold for a moment, but we got to take a quick break here for a moment, and we'll get back to your second question right after these few words. You're listening to member-supported Jazz 90.1 and Sound Bites on this very chilly morning here at Member Supported Jazz 90.1.
This running computer show. Back to more Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve next on Member Supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back into this edition of Sound Bites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And we have Larry still on the phone. Go ahead, Larry.
Okay, last question. Lately, it seems like my iPad and sometimes my iPhone are not turned off when I get up in the morning, even though I'm pretty certain I turned them off the previous night. Am I getting old and missing something here, or is there a possibility that for some reason they're on?
Are you actually turning them off or just putting them asleep?
I turn it whenever you press the button for 3 or 4 seconds and the little thing comes up at the top and you slide it to turn it off, you're actually turning the machine off, right?
Yeah, that should power it off completely. If you just press the button, it just goes to sleep.
All right. Maybe I'm going to chalk it up to just getting old at this point and missing something, but I'm going to keep an eye on it.
All right.
Okay.
I don't.
Thank you, guys.
If you set an alarm,
yeah,
does the alarm turn it on?
Oh, does it power up the machine?
And turn it, yeah, because I use my iPad as my alarm clock.
I haven't tried that.
So that
I
could be.
I don't use it like that.
Okay.
I got up this morning and got ready to turn the iPad on just to check the weather, and it was already on, and I was pretty certain I turned it off last night. Now, I have one of the original iPads, and I have it in the case with the 4 flaps on it. You turn it, and it's supposed to turn things off. And I thought at one point maybe that's doing something strange, but I'll just keep an eye on it. I thought that might be something you were readily familiar with, but I might be actually not turning it off completely.
All right.
I'll keep an eye on this.
Yeah, take a closer look and call us back and let us know what you find out.
Okay, I will.
All right. Thank you.
Take care. Stay warm.
Yep. Bye-bye.
And there's no real problem in leaving it on overnight, leaving it charging fully.
Yeah.
Is if you use an Apple charger, they are designed to not overcharge the device. We have had heard of problems with knockoff chargers causing problems with devices. In fact, Apple had a program that, in fact, it still might be running. If you bought a knockoff iPhone charger, they will give you a discount on a real Apple charger.
Oh. Huh. That's nice of them.
Wow. Yeah. The Apple chargers are $20, so that's not too bad. But you go on Amazon, and you find these knockoff chargers for $5, $6.
Right. Yeah.
And there's something to be said about being too cheap.
Well, yeah. There are certain corners that get cut when you start trying to charge less and less for something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there was a guy that I read, I'll probably never find it again. He actually took apart a bunch of these chargers.
Yeah, I was thinking about that.
And looked at the circuitry, how the high voltage and low voltage halves of the the device are separated. And because you're putting 110 volts in and you're getting 5 volts out. And some of the really, really cheap knockoff chargers, there's virtually no insulation between those two sides. And it's really easy on the cheap chargers to get 120 volts coming out and fry your device.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go back here a little bit, and especially folks of my age will remember back in the day when things were made in Japan, it was always thought of being very cheap.
Sure.
You know, it was all poor quality, poorly made. You know, you didn't get much of. Well, nowadays, anything made in Japan, technology-wise, you know, electronics or anything else, they kick butt.
Well, and all of the companies, you can buy good or you can buy cheap.
Well, where I was going with this is, you know, Japan was the country before,
right?
Third world
associated
country
with that
was associated with it.
Yeah.
Now it's going to China,
right? Well,
and you know, I'm seeing more and more stuff that comes out of China.
Even Japan and South Korea are sending the manufacturing to China.
Yeah, but the thing that is, though, they're doing it cheap, but they're also doing it Quasimodo, as a lack
What's
of a
that?
Better term. Quasimodo. You know, it's not the best of things, not the worst. They're minimum.
Right, right.
They're minimum as far as, you know, really doing it right.
Yeah. And as a manufacturer, you can make something really good with really high quality components, and it's going to cost more, or you can make something really cheap,
right.
And so vendors can choose between that. And what we often see is, you know, the name brand vendors, you know, Apple, HP, you know, Dell, Sony, they will use the good stuff, but then, you know, even a company like Dell, you can buy, what is it, their Optiplex is their high-end good series.
Right.
And then they have their, you know, home consumer models, which are a lot cheaper. And so the components in them are just cheaper made, cheaper built. It doesn't last as long. And so that's a decision you make when you're buying something,
yeah.
You know, the old joke is you can have it good, fast, or cheap. Pick two.
Right.
Yeah.
So now it's become you can have it good or cheap. So if you want it cheap, it's not going to be all that good.
Yeah. No.
And it's going to wear out faster, and you're going to replace it more
their
often.
Their standards are a lot lower. You know, they just try in China just get things out and.
Yeah. Well, and what was the mess with the hoverboard? So a company came out with a hoverboard, which actually doesn't hover.
When you say hoverboard, it's a platform that you stand on.
A self-balancing skateboard, basically. And so this company came out with these, what were they, like $200-$300 initially?
Yeah, think like Segway without the handle.
Without the handle, yeah. And they're cool, and they got popular. So suddenly a dozen other Chinese companies started knocking them off for $100 or less. And now we have a problem of bad batteries. Batteries failing, batteries catching fire. Mm-hmm. It was the New York subway system banned them from the subway. The company making the good ones has sort of been hurt by that. And nobody knows who the good company is and who the cheap company is anymore. The reputation of their product has been lost by the cheap knockoffs.
Yep. Matter of fact, they've changed the ad in our store. Before it was, don't use skate shoes.
Right.
I don't think they make any more.
Wheelie
now,
shoes?
Now they say no motorized
wheeled vehicles.
Yeah. Wheeled devices in the store.
Oh, boy.
Because, I wouldn't doubt that some folks try to come in with those little Segway things. What are they called anyways?
Well, the company that made the good one called them hoverboards, and then everyone else started calling them that, too.
From Back
to the Future. Yeah. Now, there is an actual hoverboard that hovers using superconductors.
Right. Wasn't Lexus working on that for a while? They were doing a demo just to prove that it could get done. Their engineers were capable of pulling that off.
Yeah, I saw
yes,
a thing.
Yes, they did it with a bodysuit, wasn't it? Of magnets or something that this person dropped.
Well, the one I saw probably on Discovery News, they had what looked like a traditional skateboard, but it was filled of superconducting magnets.
Okay.
And then they fill it with liquid nitrogen because it only works when it's super cold.
Yeah, super cool.
So when the liquid nitrogen boils off, the levitation stops. And then they built a skate park with metal ramps, basically metal under the concrete, because it's a magnet, it has to push against metal.
Mm-hmm.
And so, they, in addition to the interviews with some of the riders, it's completely different feel than a skateboard. And in this special skateboard park, you have to memorize where the ramps are, the actual metal pieces of the ramp, because you just can't skate on any piece of the concrete. You have to go on the metal piece of it.
Yeah, they're specific.
All right.
So if you have compatible roads and compatible devices and you make it super cold, then you can sort of pull it off.
Yeah. So a room temperature superconductor is one of the holy grails of science and materials now.
All right, we go to the phones now. We got Art. Art, go ahead.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good. Yourself, sir?
Good. Haven't listened in a long time. I understand Nick's laid up for the moment.
Yeah, he's unavailable today.
He's not here today.
I assume he's listening, so he'll know that I'd like to get in touch with him.
Okay.
And this is a personal thing that Nick and I are trying to arrange. So.
Okay. All right. You don't have to go into detail.
Do you have a computer question?
Yeah. Do you have a question?
Nope. Thanks for your help.
Okay. Thanks, Art.
Alrighty.
Yeah. So the challenge
there's
is
this thing called email too,
or a telephone.
Yeah.
So the thing we were talking about is that it's really difficult to get quality equipment and not have to pay the money to do it. We're finding that, there are lots of fantastic creators of equipment and devices out of Asia. I'm thinking of Foxconn as being one. You know, they're the one that Apple looks to for a lot of their equipment. And Apple is no slouch. They have very high standards, and they demand that equipment meet the standards, and they're willing to pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
And because Apple's customers are willing to pay. But when you have this race to the bottom where everything has to get cheaper, okay, and then even cheaper than that, and then how do we make it even cheaper so that we can beat out our competition?
Yep.
Then in an unregulated environment where you don't have things like the underwriters' laboratories, then you end
starts
up with
really suffer.
Quality and even safety becoming an issue.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
And a lot of people have asked why the manufacturing can't be done in America, and the short answer is we don't have that capability anymore. We shipped it all overseas, and we don't have manufacturing plants here. We don't have skilled people here anymore. I remember when I was a kid, all my parents' friends, you know, working at Kodak, you know, manufacturing cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just what was done here in the 70s right. and 80s, and we lost all that.
Yep.
But now the Foxconn plant that Dennis mentioned in Shenzhen, China, they have 1 million people working there.
Yep. Right.
In the plant. Now, you know, that's not the population of the town. There's 1 million people working in the plant.
Yep. That would be like if just everybody in downtown Rochester, or everybody who lived in Rochester, or the greater
The whole
Rochester
five county area isn't... Yeah. 1 million. It's only like 900,000.
Happened to work all at the same place.
Right. And so there was a controversy a couple of years ago about the suicides at this Foxconn plant. And they put nets outside to catch people that were jumping off the roof.
Really?
Well, the average...
It sounds like a problem, doesn't it?
Sounds like a problem, yeah. But the average suicide rate in China is 35 per million. So this plant had 30 suicides, which was lower than average. That's only 30 per million. So it wasn't really a problem.
Okay, tell you what, let's go back to the phones. We got Art.
For something a little more cheery.
Or Tony, rather.
Tony?
Go ahead, Tony.
Yes, I bought a dash cam, and it requires that you format the SD card.
Okay.
And when I go through and try to do that, it really won't do it. And
so what happens when you try?
Well, I get an error message. It says, unable to expand dash cam viewer zip into desktop, and then it gives an error to no such file or directory. So the instructions for the Mac want you to move the file named dash cam viewer zip stored in the micro SD card to the desktop, then right-click on it to open it, go to Archive Utility, and launch the ThinkWare Dashcam PC Viewer application. And that's where it needs to be formatted, but it won't let me do it for some reason.
Well, that has nothing to do with formatting the card. That's installing the software on your computer.
Yeah, sounds like the camera is set to record video, and they've included a viewer application to be able to view that video after you've taken it.
I see.
The way they've chosen to distribute that viewer software is by including it cleverly on the SD card itself.
Okay.
So if you can copy that zip file, and a zip file is a compressed file that makes files smaller so that they fit on smaller storage places, move that zip file to your computer. You can usually do that by dragging it out to the desktop. And then if you simply double-click on it, any recent Macintosh will be able to detect that you've double-clicked on a zip file and then decompress it or expand it back to its original size. Once you've done that, you'll either have an installer for your viewing software or you'll be able to access the viewing software directly.
It may be better off even to go to the Dashcam website and download the current version. I'm seeing they just released a new version February 3rd. So that would probably be a better version anyway than what came on the card.
Okay, so where did you go for that?
Dashcamviewer.com.
So you, just let me write.
Is it down. Well? Is this actually a Dashcam brand, or are you using the?
It's an X500. It's a ThinkWare Dashcam.
Oh, then you need to go to the ThinkWare website.
Yeah. Okay.
So Dashcam is a brand.
Okay.
And it's also a generic term.
No, I understand. So if I am able to download a more recent version, and how do I find where it's downloaded to?
It'll go to your download folder.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But you may not even need a program.
If
it's probably
take that SD card and put it in the dash cam and try to run it, hook it up, you know, put power it up and everything. Maybe that should be the first step I do.
Well, it would always be a good idea to check the manual and see what they recommend.
Yeah, read the manual first.
So the micro SD card is probably already formatted.
Yeah, it's already formatted, and usually that's set up to do, on an average, 12 to 14 hours of recording.
Mm-hmm. And you may not need their software to view the video file, because the Mac has video viewers built in. And so it's probably an MPEG video file.
Those dash cameras, most of them have a screen that you can turn around and play it back.
Yeah.
Right on the dash cam.
Yeah, right on the dash cam.
Or you can copy the video and play it on your computer.
And if it's like any camera made in the last 15 years, it may have the ability to format the card from within the camera itself.
I think it would already be formatted. Most of them are. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so yeah. I think I'll just install it in the card.
And again...
Yeah, plug it in, see if it works.
But take the time to go ahead and read the instructions.
Yep. Well, I do it.
Okay, all right.
RTFM, right?
Yep. You got
That's right.
Read the fine manual.
Okay, guys.
Take care.
Thanks a lot.
Yep.
You got it.
Yeah, so dash cam is sort of become a generic term now for any camera.
Kleenex or Xerox.
Yeah. Of camera. So it's any camera that you put on the dash in your car, and it records, you know, your driving, records what you see when you're driving.
Now, why would people want one of these?
Well, it got really popular in Russia because of all the insurance fraud. So people started putting cameras in their cars to prove they didn't hit that person or that person jumped in front of them. And so that became a huge popular meme on YouTube, watching these Russian dash cam videos. So now it's getting popular here in the U.S. You know, like you have a webcam in your house, you can have a dash cam in your car and just see what goes on and see what you see.
All right, tell you what, that music tells me right now we got to take a little short break, but we'll be back in just a few minutes with more questions here at member-supported Jazz 90.1 and Soundbites on Saturday, February 13th.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back to Sound Bites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm still Dennis Worster. Can you believe it?
Yeah. Amazing how that works.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah. We should say give us a call. We're standing by sitting by. Dave is standing though.
I always stand
for questions. The studio line is 966 Jazz and the 585 area code. That's 966-5299, or toll free 1-800-790-0415. You can also follow us on our YouTube stream. If you go to soundbites.org, down on the right hand side, there is a watch us on our YouTube channel. You can also go to jazz901.org and click the Listen Live button to get the audio stream. So if you're driving in the car, you can listen to the audio. Please don't watch us on video while you're driving.
Yeah, we'd prefer, unless you're in the back seat.
And you're in the back seat,
fine.
Yeah, back seat with your, the screen's built into the seats now. Okay. All the fancy cars.
That's right.
Our YouTube channel, not very exciting. Three guys sitting in a studio, but...
But we're all very handsome.
We're all very handsome.
As far as you know.
We have faces for radio. It's not how
all
it
right,
works.
Tell you what.
If you need to see us, we are on Periscope, so fire up Periscope and you can find us there as well.
I could not hear because of the commotion going on. Please say your name again.
Gwen.
Yep.
Okay.
That's it.
Sorry.
Welcome, okay. Gwen. What can we do for you?
I have a simple problem. I've always used a PC, and now we have a Chromebox.
Okay.
I'm trying to save two things, like a thumb drive. And it won't let me do it. I've gone to settings to try to find out if I had to somehow activate something or other. I just want to save to a thumb drive or the desktop. I'd like to do that too.
Well, you can't save on a Chromebook. You can't save to the desktop.
There's that. I kind of figured that out.
Well, there should be. There is some local storage.
All right, Gwen, I'm going to ask a very silly question.
No.
What are you trying to save?
Yeah.
I had. A photo, and I had some documents.
Okay.
Text and a photo.
All right. And did you find a save command? Like in a file menu?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
And then, you know, it didn't give me the choice of an e-drive, a thumb drive. It just wasn't there. And I was trying different thumb drives, thinking, oh, maybe they're not working. That doesn't seem to be the case.
All right. Well, we are furiously looking this up for you.
Yeah. Click the launch.
Simple and frustrating.
Yeah. Click the launcher, which looks like a little magnifying glass. I'll post this link too. Select files from the left menu. Choose the file collection you'd like to browse. So basically, what folder you want to put it in, and then click on save. So you can save it to your Google Drive on the local computer.
Done that.
Or you can save it to Google Drive offline.
Yep. And, you know, you can create a new folder. You can tuck it in downloads.
Right.
Right.
But I want to put it on a thumb drive.
So that would be a different
Yeah, I haven't played with mine yet, because there is a USB port, and I assumed...
One, yes, I assume two. Why give it to me if I can't use it?
Move files to your Google Drive offline, so you can save it on an offline file.
We are continuing to investigate. It's a shame that Nick isn't here, because I know that Nick is a big fan of the Chrome OS and all the devices like Chromebooks and
Well,
Chrome
here's
boxes.
A thought, though.
I'll save
Why
this
not
link.
Google how to save a file off a Chromebook to a USB device?
Yeah, that's what I've got
okay.
posted here.
And I really wasn't.
What does it say?
It told me to go to settings.
Mm-hmm.
And the settings menu is very brief. I went to advanced as well, and there's no mention of an eDrive or a thumb drive.
To save a file to your Chromebook's hard drive, choose Downloads. Okay. You can change in settings. You can change the location of your file.
You can.
Maybe that's where it's. You got to change it to detect the device.
Well, that changes the default location from your Google Drive to your cloud drive.
And yeah, and but it. I'm trying to think what I did last night. I believe, boy, I'm just not sure now, if it allowed me to specify a thumb drive, and then I tried again, and it still didn't work.
You can open files on an external storage.
Yeah, that's easy. It shows up. That's what's frustrating. When you put it in, it shows up. You know, do you want to open the file and look what's on it? You can do that.
So you should be able to open it from the thumb drive, and then theoretically it would save it back to the thumb drive.
Yeah. So I'm sure that was how I determined, yes, this is a good thumb drive, because it's letting me open it, I can view the files, but then you stall.
Yeah, it looks like everything is assumed you're saving it in the Google Drive.
Yeah. Well.
Online or offline.
Maybe what I need to do is investigate Nick's book, and he has probably a website that I could shoot him a question.
Oh, sure.
It's soundbites.org. There's a forums link where you can post questions.
Okay.
And Nick's book would always be a great choice, especially if you're getting used to something that's new.
Yeah, this kind of makes me feel better that I'm not the only one that was stymied.
Well, it's not something that's jumping off the internet and right into our face, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Anytime.
Sure.
Thank you for calling.
And we'll see if we can find it, too.
We'll continue to research this for you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yep.
Goodbye.
It should be fairly easy. So if you can open it from a flash drive or what they call external storage device, you should be able to save it. To the external storage device, so you can save it on your.
You know what I would do?
Hard drive. Yeah,
I would go to YouTube, and I would find. I would search at YouTube, because there was probably going
saving
to be somebody
files to
who's
Chromebook
doing
on YouTube. Here we are, a 6-minute video.
That's okay. You know what I do on YouTube now? I'll go to the little gear icon, and you can tell it to play back at a speed that's faster than regular time.
Yep.
You can change it from normal speed. I usually change it
or
to
slower,
like 25%.
Yeah.
Just so that people, because the thing that's annoying about YouTube is that it takes people forever to get to the point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's like the first minute and a half is just them
introducing
themselves.
They want their 15 seconds of free.
Yeah.
Bang, really.
So they're just introducing themselves or introducing the concept, and I just need them to get to like the 8 seconds of what I don't know. And and making
get
them talk
it.
Faster is a good way to do that.
All right, tell you what, let's go back to the phones. We got Bill. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, I got a computer that was built by a local shop.
Okay.
And I've got a hard drive switch. I've got 4 hard drives, and I can just turn the switch. One hard drive is Windows 7. The other 3 are Linux.
Okay.
If I install Windows 10, is that secure boot going to change the BIOS so that I can no longer get into my Linux drives?
It shouldn't change the BIOS.
Doesn't it go to secure boot?
Maybe, but that shouldn't change the BIOS.
Well, I thought that was in the BIOS.
Is the switching that you're doing from within the BIOS, or is that part of the Lilo or something else?
It's a hard switch. It's an IDEX 400, and I just turn the knob, and it clicks to the next hard drive.
Interesting. I'm not sure I've seen one of those before.
Oh, it's fun.
Okay. Well, if it's a physical hard drive connection, then I don't understand how one OS would attempt to interrupt
Well, I thought that Windows 10 changed the BIOS and put in secure boot, because I know if you got Windows 10, it's a real pain to, like, dual boot into Linux.
Hmm.
I haven't heard that. I know that new computers can come with secure boot as an option, but I don't think Windows 10 can put it in the BIOS if it isn't already there.
Because, you know, I'd hate to try it and find out all my Linux stuff is blocked.
Yeah, then you could uninstall Windows 10.
Let's see.
which is a pain in itself.
Yeah.
Now, do you have your EFI secure boot already built into your BIOS?
I have no idea because it's got Windows 7 on it.
Well, that would be on the motherboard manual describing the BIOS.
Oh.
So secure boot is a hardware feature built into your BIOS and part of the motherboard. Windows 10 can use secure boot, which the intent is to make sure you don't have a virus or, you know, rootkit preempting your boot system.
Right. Now, I thought Windows 7 was going to be supported until 2022 or something.
It is if you have their extended support agreement. Usually that is for corporations or government agencies. It's not usually for consumers.
Well, how long for consumers?
I did have to look that up a couple of weeks ago. I was able to Google for it.
Windows 10, Windows 7 lifecycle.
If you do a Google
search
where you restrict it to a Microsoft site, they have a lifecycle fact sheet, I believe.
Yeah.
That lays out the difference for all the different OSs.
So Windows 7 Service Pack 1 mainstream support ended January 13th, 2015.
About it.
A year ago.
Yeah.
Extended support is January 14th, 2020. So they have stopped updating Windows 7 unless you have purchased that extended support contract.
Right. And then Windows 8 is an additional 3 years.
Yeah, January 9th, 2018.
So I will still be able to use Windows 7. It just won't get updated.
Right. Yeah. Nothing's going to stop Windows 7 from working.
I won't have anything overwrite my system.
Right. It's just not updating. But what you have to be watching for is that the Windows 10. What is it? The GXP. Get Windows 10.
Yeah. Windows 10 download
will automatically be downloading in the background. And right now, the program pops up and asks if you want to install Windows 10.
I already went into the.
And turned all that off.
I erased that update, and I took it off the task manager, so I don't get that anymore.
But it keeps coming back.
No,
and
as long as I don't update that, there was an update.
Right, it came in one of the updates. Yeah.
And if you uninstall that update, that doesn't come back.
But it kind of comes back in a newer update.
Yeah, another update.
And Microsoft recently changed it from optional to recommended. To really push it on people, and eventually from recommended it will become required and install itself without you knowing. So it's there's a...
So like Dave, I shouldn't update, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yep, turn off automatic updates.
Yeah, I've got that off.
Yeah, and it's kind of a thing in general. The automatic updates are nice, but I've even when it's available, I never do the express update. I'll do the manual selective. So I can look at it, see what it's updating.
Yeah, pick and choose what you want to do. Because sometimes, again, they try recommending this driver or that driver, and they're not always the best.
Yep. Well, I'm not sure all my software or hardware would update to Windows 10.
Right, that's the big problem people are running into, is they don't know if their software is compatible. And suddenly this Windows 10 has automatically downloaded and using up disk space and then automatically installs as part of your update. And suddenly your whole computer looks different and the program you rely on may not work anymore. And that's one of the biggest reason people are hating Windows 10. If you start on a new machine with all new software, it's great.
Well, and that's kind of always been the case. Yeah, you know, yeah. It's like, well, if I was running, you know, 95 or 98, and well, Windows XP came out, okay. But if I go buy a brand new machine at the shop, then, you know, hey, it runs fine. Because you don't have to take into account anything that you've had in previously, any software or hardware or items. But then, you know, when 7 comes along and suddenly you've got a creaky hardware running XP, then you end up in that same boat where... It seems like the OSs really like to have that modern machine.
I'd be in a whole bunch of trouble.
Yeah. Yep. So that's what Dave's doing with his Windows 7 machine. Take it offline so it can't update.
Yeah, I'm going to just literally take it off, because I don't need it connected to the internet. I'm just using my Chromebook. And the Chromebook, I don't have to worry about any viruses, no updates, because, oh, it's not Windows. Yep. You know, it's based on the Chrome system, so viruses and spyware and everything else, I don't have to worry about. I still love it. Last week, though.
Yeah, you get the fake messages, yeah. Oh,
Nick was sitting here, and he gets a message saying, oh,
your Windows is infected.
Yeah, your Windows is infected. You know, and it's like, really? You know, well, right now, tell you what, we got to take a short break here. Thanks for calling. But we'll get into a little more of that and why to go to a Chromebook, say, over Windows 10, because started to get into some of the technology and, you know, what's going to be expected and, you know, as far as hardware. But there's some other aspects which maybe we can cover in the next hour. But you know what? You got to stay tuned. And you are listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in about roughly about 5 minutes. See you soon.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition of Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And Nick is taking a well-deserved Saturday off and just resting.
That's right.
I'll leave it at that. And we've got Bill on the phone. Go ahead, Bill.
Good afternoon, guys. I have a question on Windows Defender.
Okay.
I've always had it turned off. I've always turned it off and used other things. Maxim PC in their latest issue, Protect Windows 10, number one is to turn it on. Do you agree with that? And if you do, what conflicts of other things should I be aware of?
All right. Well, before we get into that, for all those people who are listening, let me describe what Windows Defender is.
Yeah.
It's an application that helps protect your computer against pop-ups, against slow performance, and some security threats that are caused by spyware and other malware.
Spyware, malware.
It attempts to detect those and remove those things from your computer.
Right. And basically, we've always suggested, Bill, using other third parties, because here's the issue. Microsoft has a very poor record in updating their databases as far as what it can detect.
Which is why I haven't used it.
Exactly.
Right. It is getting better, but
that's not a high priority for them. You know, so whereas that's why we always recommend, you know, like your super anti-spyware or malware bytes, because that's all they do, is they're worried about updating their product constantly. Microsoft will update Defender, whenever it feels like it. So other stuff can sneak in and get in there, because that's not a high priority. They're not making any money off of it. Whereas your third-party places like Super Anti-Spyware, Malware Bytes, you try it, and then you can pay for the, you know, subscription, get the updates automatically and all that other stuff, and it's constantly keeping your machine updated and protecting you from all this other stuff that could creep in. You're not paying anything for Defender, so what incentive is there for them to keep it up?
And that's sort of the issue we've kind of run into with the third-party programs, is that Windows Defender, which is built into Windows 8 and it replaced the old Security Essentials, comes free with the computer. And so there's less incentive for the third-party companies to write anti-malware software.
Right.
But what we're seeing is that they've mostly gone after corporate customers, and then the home version is free because the corporate customers are paying for it. But yeah, every one of the virus and malware wrap-up programs, they tend to pick different number ones because a lot of times it depends on when they tested it. So, you know, this version of Windows Defender that happened to come out, you know, yesterday works really good.
Yeah, because it's got an updated database. Yeah. But, you know, again, I'm not a fan of it. And I, you know, until they can prove to me otherwise, no, I'm not going with the bill.
Well, that's why I'm calling. I've trusted Macs and PC for a while, but that one surprised me.
Yeah. And you probably is a good magazine to trust. But make sure you look for the little advertisement buttons.
Yep.
Yeah.
So who sponsored this?
This is an article, Protect Windows 10, and it's got like 10 tips for
right.
Yep.
The trick with these any of these tools is that it's really just, remember the arms race between the United States and the Soviet Union?
That's over?
No, I didn't say that. But the good guys versus bad guys situation with the people who make the antivirus and anti-malware software versus the people who are producing the viruses and the malware is very similar. It's kind of a lot of cloak and dagger. But the bad guys, the first thing they're going to do, if they have any brains in their head, is go find a machine, install several different kinds of malware, anti-malware tools, and then make sure whatever they're about to release fools it.
Yeah.
So the big companies like Norton and McAfee and Microsoft's own, generally they don't release the virus till it can get through it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So yeah. Do keep these things up to date, but remember that they aren't foolproof and that there is no such thing as perfect protection if you are electing to keep your machine on the internet.
Well, thank you very much. No changes is always a good idea.
Yeah. All right, like there that. You go. Take care, my friend.
Thank you.
But I am seeing a lot of magazine reviews in the last couple of months are saying that Windows Defender is really improving. I guess when you're crappy, it's easy to improve.
Could it get any worse?
There's
only one way to go but up.
Yeah. And then there also are some people that live dangerously and don't run an antivirus because they don't do dangerous things. You know, mm-hmm. The old joke is don't walk down dark alleys with $20 bills hanging out of your pockets.
Yep. Yes.
But there are so many drive-by installs and drive-by downloads. You can go to a website that has an infected ad.
Right.
And you don't even have to click anything. The ad runs and downloads malicious software.
Right.
And so it's getting more and more dangerous out there.
Yep. All right, tell you what, back to the phones. We got Victor on. Go ahead, Victor.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
I have two questions. The first one is I have audio files on a USB drive. Is there something small or portable I can use to access them? Because I really don't want to have to hook it up to my laptop or a desktop.
Yeah, use the cloud.
Yeah, don't put them on the flash drive. If you put them on the cloud, they can be connected and used on any device. But you would have to use some sort of a computing device that can accept a flash drive, and generally that would be a computer. Probably something like a Chromebook would be the least expensive and lightest file that would a computer that would accept a flash drive.
Okay.
What kinds of files are we talking about?
What kind of files?
Audio.
Some audio players can read audio files on a flash drive.
Yeah.
But not all of them.
Early iPod competitors were using flash drives to allow you to store certain kinds of audio formatted files.
Yeah. Now most of them assume you're downloading from the cloud.
Well, I have some books, old time radio story, or, you know, the radio programs, and some books on them, and it'd be nice to listen to them, not being tied up next to a computer.
Well, yeah, then you can get a portable music player and put the files on that player. Don't leave them on the flash drive.
Okay. Any recommendations? I mean, I have no idea.
Are you Windows or Mac?
Windows.
See, that's always the joke. Windows has music players, but nobody uses them. So it's the Apple iPod Touch, which is a music and video player,
right.
Basically an iPhone without the phone in it.
And will work with your Windows machine.
And works mm-hmm. with the Windows machines. There are also Android. There's Android phones.
Right.
Nick has one he calls an iPod. It's an old Android phone that he took the phone plan off of, so it's just a music player. Offhand, I don't know of any standalone music players anymore because cell phones do it all too. So if you have a smartphone, you could do it on that.
I'm working on that. I don't have that quite yet.
Okay. When you get to the point where you do have that, this is going to become a lot easier for you.
So you can just actually plug in the flash drive into your cell phone then, or the smartphone?
No.
You have to get those audio files and put them someplace where the cell phone can find them.
Either on a cloud service like Google or Box, or you sync them from your computer.
Okay, so I have Carbonite, so they're on Carbonite also.
Let's see, does Carbonite allow you to access those files from the web?
From the web, yes. So you would need a web...
Is there an iOS app for Carbonite where you could get to the file that way and then play it? There would be if it was on Dropbox.
If it was on Dropbox, it might be just easiest to sync it from your computer. So you've got, say, 50 files on your computer, you copy them to your iPod and then go, and then it plays it right off the iPod without needing to copy more.
Okay, so this is iPod Touch that you're talking about.
Right.
This is the smallest one.
Okay, yeah.
And they're available just about anywhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. My second question is directed to Dennis and Dave because it's a Windows question. Some days I just don't want to take my computer to a repair shop. Do you guys offer remote assistance?
Remote assistance is very hard.
Yeah.
Without being able to see the computer to know to see what's wrong with it.
Yeah.
I know my shop does house calls. Dennis, you're not doing freelance stuff anymore, are you?
Very limited.
Very little, yeah.
Neither.
And Dave doesn't do house calls anymore.
No.
Okay.
I'm strictly bring it in and do it because just way of gone.
Right.
So you're only a couple blocks away from me, so I can just walk it down. It's not. I was just thinking, because I had a Garmin a GPS that I had a problem with, and they actually got on my computer and took care of the Garmin problem.
Yeah, but if it's other related stuff, as far as malware, that type of stuff.
It depends on the request.
Yeah, we gotta actually see what's going on.
And a lot of times the problem is the internet doesn't work. So we can't remote in because you can't get to the internet.
Right.
Okay. All right, well, thank you very much, guys.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Take care.
Yep. Yep. And in fact, that's something to be aware of and be wary of. The fake virus messages we've talked about, most of them will have you call a telephone number, a free tech support number, they often say. And the fake tech support guys will remote into your computer to fix the problem. And
also drop off whatever they feel like.
Right. They can install malicious software. They can weed through your files.
Rang the doorbell and come straight into your house.
Yep. And steal all your stuff.
Rifling through your stuff.
We even heard from someone who said, they were taking so long, I just went to bed.
Oh boy.
And left the people rummaging around in their computer overnight.
Louise, no way.
I helped somebody this week who happened upon one of these messages, and this was the first time I had seen it. It had also included audio, where a very nice, calm person was saying, you've got an infection and you need to handle this the following way, and be sure to call the number that's on your screen because your documents and photos.
Don't close this window.
Yeah. That's right. it's craziness. It's really ramped up.
If only they'd use their powers for good. And part of me thinks that the bad guys are hiring tech support companies who don't know it's a scam.
Yeah.
Probably.
Could be. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Tell you what. Let's go back to the phones. We got Joe from
Chickawaga, New York.
Go ahead, Joe.
Well, previous caller, I don't know if they're still making them, but SanDisk at one time was selling an MP3 player.
Maybe that's the one I was thinking of.
Yeah. You can probably find third-party media players now. They're not that common because cell phones can do it all, but they're a lot cheaper than a cell phone.
I haven't actually seen one in person, but I've seen like on Amazon, Newegg, that there are some Android tablets that have like 4.3-inch screens, so they're like mini tablets, and they're really inexpensive. I think one of the most expensive components of tablets and larger smartphones is the larger screen with all those pixels and all that.
Yeah. But if all you want is music, then the tiny one. In fact, Apple has the iPod Shuffle for $50. All it does is audio files.
And
it's got a little clip on it. It's designed for runners. They just want audio, and you clip it to your coat and just run with it.
And once you move your audio to it, you're fine. But then to have this guy get his audio onto it, I think was going to be the trickier part.
Yeah, with something like that, you have to sync it to your computer. With the iPod Touch or the like the Android tablets, they have a web browser built into the device, and so you can download audio files directly from the web.
Plus, you could put things like the Google Drive app on and
Yep.
Start moving things to your Google Drive account.
Sure, sure. Yeah, Google Drive, Box, Dropbox, any of those online storage providers can make your files available to you.
Somebody did text in and said that Carbonite will download MP3s. You can even, stream them from the Carbonite site.
That's good.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let's see.
So Carbonite has a mobile app for iOS and Android.
Yep. Mm-hmm. We're doing lots of searching here. Looks like Arcos has a USB flash drive that you just plug in and you can move things to it.
So it's a USB flash drive and MP3 player built in?
Yeah. Cool. Here's a picture.
That's cute.
So I wanted to bring up a couple of things. So the guy that was had the Linux installation and was considering Windows 10.
Yep.
First of all, you have to have a backup plan in case things go horribly wrong.
You think?
Yeah. it helps to have, file-by-file backup of, your documents, your movies, your photos, whatever. But for something system-level like that, you probably do want to take an image so that if you install Windows 10 and then all of a sudden, Linux won't boot, and it's not coming back, well, then something like CloneZilla can very quickly get you back to how you were working before.
Yep.
Yep.
As far as UEFI goes, most Linux distributions have several versions of the kernel available. I mean, the one obvious one is, i386 versus 64-bit, but they also have ones optimized for virtualization, optimized for real-time. One of them you could see in the list with your distribution is a signed kernel. In other words, what they have done is they've gone to the UEFI consortium, I forget what they call themselves, and they actually have a key that will work with UEFI BIOS, and when the Linux kernel is loaded in, its signature is actually checked, and it should verify. So that's certainly one option, is to go into your Linux distribution and see if they have a signed kernel.
Yep.
Yeah, that would do it.
Cool. Thank you, Joe.
All right, Joe.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Stay warm.
All right.
All right, tell you what, folks, we got to take a short break right now, but we will be back. Those folks that are on the line, please stay on the line. We'll get to you in just a few moments right here at member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition of Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And we have
Before we go that far, for Gwen, who recently switched to a Chromebox, we heard from Nick that there is an app called Files. And you run that app, and it will let you see your external devices.
Oh, cool.
Good.
All right, let's go back to the phone. We got Mark on the phone. Go ahead, Mark.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
I got a question for you. I've got a gateway computer running Windows 7 that I've had since 2012, and I've noticed lately when it boots up, it's booting to like a blank screen, and once in a while it does that, and the only way to get it to boot again is I have to hold down the power button and then restart it again, and most of the times it does. This last time I went into the computer management console and I looked up some of the stuff, and it seems to be there's a problem with the hard disk. So my question is to you, what's my best course of action to replace that hard drive, seeing that I don't actually have a copy of Windows? It's on the partition. On the hard drive, all I have is the backups you make via the software from the manufacturer.
So part of that should have been the Windows install.
Yeah,
right.
But I would, backing up a step, I would say a blank screen would be a video card problem. If the hard drive is bad, the screen should light up, you should see the OEM logo, and then you should get an operating system not found error.
Do you hear the beeping that it even, spins up?
Yep.
Okay, how many beeps are you getting?
You get one kind of a long beep, beep, and then she boots.
Yep, that's okay.
And,
sounds normal.
But I walked away this last time when I started it, and all I got was a total blank screen, and nothing was running.
All right, here again, you're running Windows 7?
Mm-hmm.
All right, have you tried when it's booting up? Because who knows, maybe the video driver got messed up. Hitting the F8 key. Continuously hit the F8 key to try to get it to start up in safe mode.
Uh-huh.
And some, because that, what that does is it just loads very generic stuff. It's the bare minimum to get Windows up and running.
That's what I did when I restarted it, because it obviously gave me the message that Windows hadn't shut down correctly what mm-hmm. they wanted to do, and I booted it up in safe mode when I did that, and she booted up.
All right, so if you can get back into safe mode,
uh-huh.
go into the device manager and see if there's if it's seeing your video card. Maybe you might want to have it uninstall it, so when it reboots, it retries to find your video card.
Okay. Because I noticed in the console, it gave me an error for, it says disk, and it has a red X on that error, and it says disk, and I double click on it, and it gives me to look up the problem online, and mm-hmm. I went online, and
what is the error it's giving you?
It actually, I can find it for you right now. I can get right back in there.
Well, I would say the first thing you want to do is back up everything just to
yeah.
be safe.
Yeah, definitely.
I've got full backups of everything. I mean, I've got backups of backups.
Okay.
So that's not a problem.
Yeah, so if you do have to replace the hard drive,
right.
then the disks that the manufacturer had you build should let you reinstall Windows again.
Yeah,
it should. I don't need any software from the actual computer to reinstall off of those backups, because
not if you made the restore disks from the computer
from Windows.
So it's not restoring your data. It's the OEM, whoever made your computer, would have a Windows restore disk,
right? And it's going to put it back to the day you brought it out of the box. Everything, whatever was on that computer the day you opened it up, turned it on for the very first time, that's what's going to be back on it.
Right.
So if we put a new hard drive in it and put those disks in, it will load from those disks.
Yes.
Right.
Okay.
And then you can restore your personal
now what's
data
gonna
from your backups.
What's happened is you can take that drive out, unhook it just right now, and just go ahead and, you know, see if this is going to work. Put the new hard drive in just so it doesn't totally fail yet. But go ahead and put the new hard drive in. Mm-hmm. Try loading those disks. Now, what's going to happen is when you put that new hard drive in, it's going to detect, it's going to go, because it's not going to find an operating system, it's going to jump to the CD-ROM drive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to tell you, hit any key to load to the from the DVD/CD-ROM drive.
Right.
You go ahead and do that. It should go ahead then, start that CD up, or DVD, whichever you're using,
mm-hmm.
and start the install process.
Is this a name brand PC, or is it a custom build?
It's a Gateway.
Oh, that's right. You said Gateway.
Yeah.
You can probably even find instructions on their website on how to restore.
If I do this, I'm going to have someone like Dave or somebody do it. I'm not going to tackle it myself. I'm just not that comfortable.
Okay. Yep. Well,
smart doing man. It.
Yeah.
But the error that comes up, I've got it here, and it says error with a red exclamation point circle. And it comes up, it says, the driver detected controller error on device/hard disk. This is hard disk 2/DR2.
Hard drive controller error could be your motherboard.
Yeah, that could be the motherboard.
Okay, and then I got another one, and this says, the driver detected a controller error on /device/hard disk 8/DR8.
That could be the motherboard.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a much more expensive repair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you can even get it.
Yeah. You can try plugging your hard drive into a different connector on the motherboard and see if there's multiple hard drive controllers. Sometimes there's one controller that handles all the drives, and sometimes, you know...
Yeah, if it's SATA, he can go to a different SATA port.
Yeah, because SATA usually only has one port per controller.
Right.
Unless it's a master controller.
Yeah, but if he's going on SATA 1 right now and he moves it to SATA 2.
And, see how that works.
And see what happens.
That's as simple as just opening up, moving it to the other one, and booting it back up?
Yeah.
Yep.
That's as simple as that. Okay.
Try it and see.
That's definitely a cheap thing to try first.
Mm-hmm. Because I know there's another SATA port in there.
Yeah, because it's just like USB ports and everything else. You know, they can go bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay.
But it's a cheap way to try it.
All right.
All right.
And the other thing about the person looking for a media player.
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot of ways, simplest ways, you go to the store and they have tons of prepaid phones.
Oh, yeah.
That are relatively cheap.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to have to plug it into the computer, all you have to do is get a micro SD card, and use that to transfer your music.
Right, instead of a flash drive, yeah.
Yeah.
And then just don't pay for the phone service.
You know, and it's pretty simple and easy, and they tend to be pretty decent music players.
Yep. Nice.
That's true. So, okay, good to know.
All right.
Yeah, take care.
Thanks for your help. So nice.
Yeah, that was, I hadn't thought of that. Nick and his iPod, don't pay for phone service, and everything on it except the phone will work.
Right.
Same thing, you buy a cheap prepaid phone, buy them for $10 and you got, 10 minutes of phone service. Just don't pay for more phone minutes.
That's right.
Yep.
And the rest of it should keep working.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. We got Paul on the line. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. I've had some problems with my computer the last several weeks.
Okay.
Couple of weeks ago, couldn't get any image on my screen. It turned out it was the graphics card after all. So I did replace the graphics card and got my display working just fine now. But I don't have any sound. None coming out from the rear of the computer through the normal ports that I use for the speakers. And there's also no sound coming from the front port on the front of the machine. It would normally go to my earphones.
What operating system?
This is Windows 7.
Okay. And have you gone into the device manager to make sure that the device is being seen?
Yes, and it says the device driver is working okay. I got, everything looks good for that.
Is there a separate sound card, or is it built into the motherboard?
No, it's built into the motherboard, yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's not muted?
Did you...
Right.
Yeah, not muted. Did you, when you replaced the sound card, accidentally unplug something else?
No, it wasn't...
The video card? Yeah.
No, that was all. I replaced it, and it now is working fine as far as the display is concerned,
Yeah, but while you're in there pulling cards out, you might have unplugged something that the sound needs.
Well, the sound's built into the motherboard.
Probably on the chipset of the board.
Yeah. It's on the chipset of the board.
But you would need a plug going to the speaker and a cord going... a cord going to the speaker and a cord going to the front panel and rear panel jacks.
Yeah, right. And those, I checked those. They're all... look like they're okay. I reinserted them just to be sure.
Okay, I'm going to ask another one of my patented silly questions.
I was going to first suggest, how about uninstalling the driver and then try reinstalling it?
I suppose I could try that. That's a good idea.
If you unplug your speakers and plug them into any other type of music playing device, do the speakers still make noise?
I didn't do that with the speakers, but my headphones, I did that with another computer, and their headphones are working just fine.
Okay, and you plug those headphones into the front or into the back?
I tried them both.
Okay.
Both.
When you plugged the headphones in, do they take a different port than the speakers do, or did you have to unplug the speakers first?
It's the same. First I took out the speakers and I put the headphone in place, and then I tried the headphones in the front jack.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, especially on those rear ports, there's often a headphone jack and a speaker jack at different power levels.
Are the speakers powered? Do they connect to the wall for electricity?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'm just trying to make sure that the speakers being plugged in and potentially either not having a proper connection or being with their volume all the way turned down or powered off. Want to try and remove that from the equation.
Yeah, I understand that. I have one other computer I can try the speakers with just to triple check on those. Mm-hmm. But it looks to me like there's something with the computer itself. Now, the question is there something in the BIOS that I could change that might confirm this?
It depends.
It depends. There might be something that says enable audio.
Yeah, audio is enabled either or disabled. Disabled.
Well, I did see that button in the BIOS, and I made sure that was enabled. Yeah. They also offered something called 1294, some kind of a...
1394, yeah, that's FireWire.
Yeah, and then there was something called HD audio and...
Yeah, HD audio, you also might find digital audio. Yeah, so if you turn digital audio on and you're using analog speakers, that may not work.
Right, so I made sure everything there looked proper.
So probably uninstalling the sound card drivers and then rebooting and let them reinstall might bring it back.
Okay, that's something to try. I mean, does it sound like it could be something hardware on the motherboard itself that could be causing this?
Possible, but not necessarily likely.
Don't know.
Right.
Yeah, no.
I didn't think so. All right, some more things to explore.
There you go, sir.
Thanks
good luck.
For giving us a call, Paul.
If all else fails, you can often get a USB audio adapter.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is a lot cheaper than replacing the motherboard in the computer.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
But a few things that he could check out.
Yeah.
I mean, especially since he's not getting, you know, a failure or anything else, it's could be just a driver that got, you know, like you say, messed up,
especially if he was installing other drivers for the new video card.
Doesn't take much.
He may not have taken out the previous video card drivers either.
Yeah.
So there may be.
There's a lot of things, and without seeing it, you know, it's hard.
Yeah. Yeah, I always shoot.
Yeah, there we go on that remote support thing again. It's very hard to do remote support.
Yeah, I mean, you can sit there.
We try every week.
I mean,
here we are.
We can sit there and visualize a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just some incidences that you have to actually be sitting there or see it happen. Because folks will sit there and try to describe this to me. And I go, well, that's all good, you know, and they read me this long error code in it.
Yes.
I says,
and I'm wearing red pants, and it's Thursday, and sometimes the information they give is useful, but sometimes it isn't.
Yeah, and, you know, it's like, that's all well and good, but, you know, I have to see it.
Right.
You know, and that means I got to bring it in. Well, no, you don't have to.
Hey, man, you called me.
Yeah.
You want to live with the issue, that's fine, too.
If you want it to work.
That's right. Yeah, but it's tricky, and that's why I was trying to go down that avenue of it being an environmental issue, where something about where they've got it set up might not be quite right. So how many times have you had it end up being that, the volume knob on my speakers, I turned it all the way down when I was getting back behind it, or some book fell off a bookshelf and disconnected a cable.
I'll put a computer back together, push the power button, and nothing happens. Oh, I forgot to plug the power in.
Get back to the wall.
All right, tell you what, folks, we've got to take a short break here, but we will be back in a few moments. The folks that are on the line, please stay on the line. We'll get to you in just a moment, right after these few words here at member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition of Sound Bites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And we now have Gary on the phone. Go ahead, Gary.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Doing
great.
Well.
Good. I got a question on cloud storage, such as Carbonite.
Okay.
What do you guys think about that? Is it worth it? Is it safe?
Well, what's your goal?
I had my external hard drive crash, and I had to get it repaired, and some of the files were kind of messed up.
Yeah, there's sort of two general classes of cloud storage. There's backup services, like Carbonite and CrashPlan. And then there's file storage services like Google Drive and Box and things like that.
Right.
Generally speaking, the file storage services are free for a couple of gigs. I think right now Google's the best deal at 15 gigs for free. If you want to do a full backup of your entire hard drive, then you're looking at something like Carbonite or CrashPlan. Uh-huh. And generally they're about $5 a month to back up with. It's good to have an offsite backup. We always talk about have a backup, but you know, fire, flood, theft, you know, they take your computer and your backup drive sitting next to it. So it is nice to have a offline backup too. And most of the offline backup, the cloud backup services will have some sort of an app or a web presence, so you can look at a file when you're not at home.
Right. Okay.
But it's not. It's a different type of service than a file syncing service like Google Drive or Box, where you want to see the same file and be able to edit it on multiple devices.
Okay. All right. Thank you much.
Yep. All right.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
CrashPlan has a really interesting service. If you have a friend that you trust, you can back up to their computer for free. And theoretically, they can back up to your computer for free.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you don't have to pay anything for that service. And then you get an offsite backup of your stuff.
So here's what you do. You take your buddy, maybe not today while it's so cold, or maybe if you want or looking for something to do. You go get in the car, you go over to your favorite shop, and you both go buy an external hard drive. Make it roughly the same size. And then you go over to your buddy's house, you install the CrashPlan software on his computer, you point it at that external drive, And then you go over to your house and you hook up the same thing the same way. And then you both, for free, CrashPlan makes it, this is free. It doesn't cost you a dime other than that external drive and your internet service. You can push your backups to his house. He can push his backups to your house.
And your data is encrypted so that he can't read it anyway. Right.
Even if he took that drive and wanted to read what was on it, he can't do it without your password.
Right.
So it's a great way to go.
And if he had documents and all that, as far as documents and spreadsheets going up to Google, he can convert them to Google Docs along with the spreadsheets and everything else. And then the storage doesn't count against his 15 gig.
That's right. Yeah.
And the photos, if you use Google Photo, you can upload as many photos, a few thousand I'm at right now, as long as they're 16 megapixels or less, you can store as many as you want up there, unlimited.
That's right. Yep.
And they're always protected. And whether I have my phone, or I'm on my Chromebook, or my desktop, or wherever, I can sign into my Google account, and I can see it. And that's the handy part about
it. Yeah. Apple has a service called iCloud Photo Library, where you can put all of your photos in the cloud. But they only give you 5 gigabytes free. Mm-hmm. And most people's photos are a lot more than 5 gigabytes.
Yeah.
So you end up paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
But even so, I don't think any of their prices are that ridiculous in terms of not having to do this yourself.
50 gigs is 99 cents a month.
Here's the thing.
You as pay far more as for the pizza.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, though, as far as price. How much value do you put on the content that's on your machine? And if something happened to it, how upset are you going to be if you lose it? Is it really worth, you know, scrimping and saying, no, I'll take my chance on it?
Would you be sad if your computer disappeared one day?
Or, hard drive.
Or the hard drive died.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you accidentally, you know, the cat jumped on the delete button.
Right. Yeah. Or
the cat did something worse to your computer. We've had those come into our shop.
Or we've had folks, you know, turn around in these partition drives.
Yeah.
You know, there's extra storage, they say, on the D drive, which is the recovery section, and they back it up to that.
Right. And it's just a partition on that same mechanism.
Yeah. And the thing dies. Well, where's your backup? Well, it was on the D.
Yep, your host.
No.
It should be a separate drive.
Yeah, it's got to be a separate drive.
Especially if you're running a business, you know, small businesses, home businesses, you should have two or three backups.
Oh, at least. Yes.
And a backup computer isn't that bad either. So when your main computer dies, you can still keep running your business while that main computer is being repaired.
The hard drives are so cheap nowadays. You know, getting a couple terabyte hard drives and rotate them, as far as backing up your bookkeeping or anything else that is going to be vital to your business, is well worth the effort of taking the time and doing it.
Yeah, it's worth your time, and you have to know yourself as well. If you are not as comfortable doing this as you really think you ought to be, there's no shame in finding a company who makes this their goal, that this is their priority, to develop a system where they literally have an entire warehouse or multiple facilities full of computers and full of storage, where this is all they do all day long. So if you need storage, it makes sense to investigate what your options are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, do your homework. Again, because I've had some folks that had old family photos.
Yeah, things that you can never replace. Or even new family, the new baby. We hear that a lot, too, the new baby photos.
You know, pictures of mom and dad way back when they got married and everything else. I had one, and I tried my best to get some of it back. I was able to get a lot of them back, but there were some others that they were gone. You know, it's just sad to say, you know, couldn't get them back. Yeah. I recommended that they, you know, there's other companies like DriveSaver and that can send it off, but it's not cheap.
No, it isn't.
And there's no guarantee again. So if it is really that important to you, you know, and I've heard, and I know you have too, Steve, and you, Dennis, oh, I meant to.
Yeah.
The meant tos aren't going to get it done, folks. If you rely on your computer, and we're more and more, all of us are nowadays, relying on it to do this and do that, and all of a sudden something crashes and you lose it at all, you're going to be pretty upset that you didn't take the time, a few minutes. A lot of it you can schedule to have it back up at night. You just leave the computer on, let it do its thing. It doesn't interrupt your life, or even, say, at dinner time, start a backup. Or, you know, upload to the cloud. Do it in the off times. And then you're going to thank yourself down the road.
And most of the time, only that first backup is going to take any amount of time.
Right.
Because it's going to back up everything. After that,
you do the incremental.
It just changed files, and you might not even know it backs up.
Yeah, because what it is, folks, here's in case you don't understand, incremental. Like Steve said, the full backup takes quite a while. But the incremental will go a lot faster because all it's doing is checking the dates, comparing the dates from the list that's in your original backup with the dates that it's reading. And if the date hasn't changed, date and time, it's not going to do it. So it quick goes through them a lot faster. And it's only going to save the ones with a different date and time, a newer date and time, that has changed. So, you know, you'll see this. Incrementals are a lot easier to, you know, go through once your main backup is already done.
Yep. There was a question on what if the other day, recently. What if all of Google's data was stored on punch cards? How many punch cards would it take?
Wow.
Do we get to guess?
Yeah, go ahead.
What do you think?
Well, so the first thing you had to do is figure out how much data Google has. They don't actually say, but
yeah,
but
they'll never say.
You can figure it out through their 10K filings and other stuff like that.
I don't think you could have a room big enough to hold all the punch cards. It's got to fill a stadium.
It would cover the city of Boston to a depth of about 5 kilometers.
Gee whiz.
I believe it. Because punch cards,
are about 80 bytes per card.
Yeah, I remember doing punch cards.
Right.
Yeah.
So it would take, what, 2 of those to make a tweet?
Yeah.
2 cards?
Yep.
Oh, that brings back.
And it's possible the NSA has more data than Google. Some of the estimates is Google has about 15 exabytes of data, but the NSA data center in Utah might even hold a yottabyte.
My goodness,
which is a lot of bytes. So we're now terabytes is the easy common word now. You get 1,000 terabytes and you're into a petabyte,
right?
And then petabyte goes to exabytes, and then is it exabytes to yottabytes or do we do nanobytes in the middle there? No, so these really really big.
It's just a lot of storage.
Yeah, a lot of storage. And so you know the joke is in the early days we didn't need more than 640K of storage.
Yeah.
And you know, K went to meg, went to gig.
I can remember installing 10 and 25 gig hard cards.
Sure.
Into the old PCs with 5 1/4 floppy drives.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's all we're ever going to need because they loaded Lotus 1-2-3 on it, and they could do their bookkeeping and everything else, you know, spreadsheets and all that type of stuff in Lotus 1-2-3. And, they were set for the world. No biggie.
Wow. So I wonder how many of those punch cards would just be cat videos.
Yeah.
or people slipping and falling or all sorts of crazy videos that you see online.
Yeah. So a yottabyte is so much. So say a terabyte hard drive today is $100.
Okay.
It would cost you $100 trillion to buy a yottabyte.
Oh. No wonder the government might be able to afford that.
Yeah. In fact, the world's gross domestic product of the entire world is only $61 trillion. So a yottabyte is a really lot of storage.
Somebody's got to ask for a price break.
Yeah, yeah. Really. Okay, folks, I want to thank you for listening and all the folks that took the time to call in. Thank you, Dennis, for braving the cold and joining us at this madhouse.
Anytime. Call me back anytime.
All right. And like Nick says, you know, so wraps up another 2 hours that hopefully you have learned some information and are a little bit better informed. But you know what? We will do this all again next week in 166 hours right here at member-supported Jazz 90.1. But hold on. Mike and George are starting to enter the studio right now to play the best German music that you're going to hear all weekend long. So stay tuned, and I'm sure George wouldn't mind listening and hearing from you folks out there too. But again, stay tuned next week for more sound bites right here at member-supported Jazz 90.1.